Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. 12 minutes after 9 o'clock, it's Friday morning. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. And this is the Roundtable panel. If you've never heard this show before, lock the radio dial right where it is, because this is exciting radio. Joining us on the panel today is a University at Albany professor and director of the journalism program, Rosemary Armeo. Good morning, Rosemary.
Good morning, Ray.
Nice to have you here.
Delighted to be here.
Really? Because it doesn't look like you're that delighted.
No, I am.
Okay. All right, good. Always. Just checking. And then there's author and activist Barbara Smith, who hasn't been here in a couple of months, and it's just great to have you here.
Couple of months, sometime in January.
All right.
Late January.
6 weeks,
yeah.
7 weeks. I'm in radio. I'm very imprecise. Just go with the flow.
Thank you so much.
Nice
Thank
to
you.
Have you here. Alan Shartok is also here. Good morning, Uncle Alan. Nice to have you with us.
Good morning, Nephew Ray. Always wonderful to be here. And welcome back to Barbara. It's great to hear her voice.
Thank you, Alan.
And how is the ankle today, sport?
Well, I don't want to complain. Why should I complain?
But every day it's the same. I don't want to complain. Well, let's just hear it.
It's a little worse.
It's a little worse.
I don't know.
Worse.
I was on it all day. Oh, yeah. I was on it all day yesterday and walking around. As per my instructions, which were, you know, if you can bear the weight, do it, because it'll help the healing. But this morning, you know, why complain?
You know, I thought about this the other day, that you're a compulsive exerciser. How does it feel not being on the bike for a week and a half now?
No, it's really bad.
Yeah.
It's really bad. I asked the doctor. I said, it's a Schwinn Aerodyne. If I use the upper part and put my bad leg on the stirrup and use my left leg to pedal, could I do that? She said, absolutely not.
Why don't you just stand on your head and use your hands? That'd be impressive.
You know.
And then you could YouTube it. And all right, so here we go. President Donald Trump will find a much more receptive crowd at the nation's largest gathering of conservative activists than when he first addressed the group 6 years ago. Trump's CPAC debut, he read from papers on a lectern. He appeared to eye the crowd somewhat nervously. No one cheered when he said he might run for president. Well, he's back today, and Trump is the first president since Ronald Reagan to address the group during his first year in office. And let me run down a little bit about what happened yesterday, and then we'll let the panel have at it. So, Vice President Mike Pence said the U.S. has what could be a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to install conservative solutions to the nation's problems. Pence said Trump's new administration gives conservatives the time to, quote, prove again that our answers are the right answers for America. He said the administration will repeal and replace the health care law, saying the nation's Obamacare nightmare is about to end. Reince Priebus, White House Chief of Staff, and Stephen Bannon made a joint appearance. It was like Sonny and Cher last night. Called on conservatives to stay active in helping Trump enact an agenda that Bannon says centers on nationalist economic approach. And some conservatives a little up in arms about that. Bannon said, we are a nation with a culture and a reason for being. Betsy DeVos, the education secretary, defended the decision to rescind public school bathroom rules for transgender students. DeVos said, quote, this was a huge example of the Obama administration's overreach. She said the guidance was a one-size-fits-all, top-down approach. She says her approach is to put as much control as possible into state, local, and parental hands. Ted Cruz predicted there will be another vacancy on the Supreme Court this summer. Didn't say who it would be. The Texas Republican told the conference that as much as the left is crazy now, they will go full Armageddon if there's another vacancy that would shift the makeup of the court further to the right. Again, he didn't say who he thought might retire. And then there was this business of white nationalist Richard Spencer, who was kicked out of the Conservative Political Action Conference. The leader of the American Conservative Union took the stage to forcefully denounce as sinister the alternative right. Dan Schneider, the ACU's executive director, called the alt-right anti-Semitic, racist, and sexist. He said people who hold those beliefs are in no way conservative. Quote, they despise everything that we believe in. Schneider specifically decried a recent Washington meeting of people who were shown on video extending their arms in the Nazi salute. And as he spoke, the leader of the alt-right, Richard Spencer, told reporters that he coined the term alt-right, and he was pretty much kicked out. All right, panel, talk about yesterday, and we have Trump this morning. Who wants to go first?
So there's a word I wanted to refer to what Betsy DeVos said about how it should be left to the states to decide. There's a word for that. It's called Jim Crow. Because when the states got to decide the status of African Americans during my lifetime. It's not something I read about or saw a documentary on PBS. When they got to make those decisions, there was differential rights and access for people of the same group. So because I was growing up in the North, I was not in the same situation as my counterparts in the South, who in some cases were being blown to bits. So that's how I feel about it.
You know, I certainly agree with that. And I think the hypocrisy about states' rights, Barbara, is extraordinary, because when it's convenient for them, it's states' rights. When it's not convenient for them, it's not states' rights. If it's marijuana, it's not. And by the way, they know full well which states, which are part of their base, will be with them on all of these issues. So it becomes states' rights when it's convenient. It's not states' rights when it's not. And I'm just sort of in dismay as to the kinds of things that I'm seeing happening in our country. It's really quite depressing.
Yeah, I have to agree with that as a liberal. I think the conservatives are in full crowing mode here. They were just, they're loving this, and why not? Their president of their own party is coming. They own all the branches of government right now. And I don't know, it sounds like Ted Cruz is planning to shoot one of them down.
Wait a minute.
But with the age of the court, he's not far off. Sometime in the near future, I can see the court having another opening, and of course then you have it's not 5-4, it's 6-3, and then there's real trouble for the liberal point of view, which was very clear yesterday. The worst thing to me was Steve Bannon. I liked it when they kept the little rumpled Nazi in hiding in the White House, but they trotted him out, and he was there crowing about economic nationalism and the end to the administrative state. That's the dismantling of government he's talking about, and I think government's kind of served the people well. I sort of like it.
It's also the dismantling of democracy, too.
I have a hard time seeing it otherwise, yeah. And I know that's a very biased point of view. We'll hear, I hope, from listeners who'll say, oh, it's just great, give it a chance, it'll be fabulous. But here's the thing, they're not promoting something new, some new order. They're promoting a return to what we had, and we grew out of it because it was so unsatisfactory. There's nothing new about what they're proposing.
Absolutely not.
Alan Chartok.
Well, you know, it is, as I left off, it's just so depressing and demoralizing, considering the fact that Hillary Clinton got the most popular votes. Now, this is something that drives Trump crazy. So you had a fairly evenly divided country, but you had more people by 3 million voting for Hillary than voting for Trump. You would think, okay, that this is a time for some reconciliation of values between the two groups. Nothing could be wronger. This guy is just out to he forgets about the popular vote, as you just said, the democracy, or small d, that goes on, and he does this thing. And he is winning, and it is depressing.
Our email address, I forgot to give that at the beginning of the show. It's panel@wamc.org if you want to make a comment here. panel@wamc.org. We'll take a short break and be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Harney & Sons Fine Teas. 30 years, 3 generations. Over 250 teas at their tasting rooms in Millerton and Soho. And lunch that features tea cuisine, harney.com. And Valvoline Instant Oil Change, committed to recycling every drop of fluid that comes out of a car to help protect the environment. Family-owned and serving the Capital District for 20 years.
Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. It's 9:22 on a Friday morning. Ray is in for Joe, and our panel today, Barbara Smith, who is back in town, and Rosemary Armeo, as well as Alan Chartok. I saw on the crawl on the TV news that Donald Trump will be speaking around 10 a.m. Any predictions as to what we will hear?
Alan first.
Well, he's the base. He's going to the base. They're the base. He's going to go there. He's going to give them what they want to hear. And they will. He will. He's gonna say the stuff that will make my hair stand up on the top of my head because he has figured this out. He knows that if he goes to them and they stick with him, he wins. And if he loses them on any count, he starts to lose them. So he'll talk about transgender bathrooms. I'll bet anything on that. And he'll talk about these other symbolic things. And he'll talk about the wall. And he'll talk about Mexico. Even though, interestingly, he has his two top guys down in Mexico, including Tillerson, the Secretary of State, saying, "Don't worry about it. Everything's fine. We're going to stay with the program we've always had." So he goes and talks about walls and rapists and people coming over, and he leaves them to clean up the mess. And he's done that with NATO. He's done that in each of these other cases. So we can pretty well see what the game plan is here now. He'll say stuff to keep the base, like this, like to the CPAC, and the others will, you know, I mean, he'll keep them, and the others will go and straighten things out, and they're not doing that because they're doing it on their own, certainly not. No, he's telling them to do it.
Yeah, I think that's an important point. This is not something that Trump is directing. This is a concerted Republican conservative action, and Trump is the face man. I think he's very much been put in that role. He goes out and says the incendiary stuff that gets headlines and liberals' heads blow off, and then his little minions go out and reinterpret what he said. My favorite yesterday was after Trump said we were going to have a military operation to carry out the deportations. And then you've got Kelly and Tillerson in Mexico's trying to sop it up. And Spicer comes out and says, "Oh, by military operation, he meant an adjective for precise."
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. I love that as a wordsmith. It's like, that's charming.
Yeah, I'm another one.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's what's going on, that Trump is the face of conservative change. And then there's all these architects, Bannon chief among them, who are really pushing through the horrors that we're going to see, the dismantling of the administrative state. I think that was the headline by far of yesterday.
And why don't we talk about what that means? I would imagine that would mean no social safety net.
Right.
I would imagine that would mean the federal grants that come to cities for things like infrastructure, roads, perhaps housing, anything that we would see as being valid and legitimate for governments to dispense. You get rid of the administrative state, that's all gone.
Right.
Right.
And I would also say it's dismantling or diminishing the size and the reach of all of the federal agencies. That's why he's got Rick Perry and DeVos and and Carson who don't even believe in the role of those agencies. And they believe they have a mandate to downsize. And it's all under this rubric of individual responsibility. Yeah, it's a good thing to pay for your health insurance yourself. It's a good thing to deal with your old age yourself. We don't need government to do that for us, even though we have been using government for that for the last 60 years.
So the parenthetical statement is, if you're rich, because ordinary working people cannot take care of those kinds of things themselves. Back in the Roosevelt era, there was recognition that that was the case.
Correct.
And that's when Social Security was first implemented. So, you know, he can live on, they can live on in their dream world because they're all either billionaires or either unsuccessful multimillionaires.
Mm-hmm. Alan Chartok, on your commentary at 7:45 this morning, you brought up a point which I thought was very interesting. And going back to President Trump's comments yesterday about taking out, quote, some bad dudes in a military operation, there seems to be a certain amount of imprecision in the way he chooses his words. And I think you suggested this morning, Alan, that maybe this is by design.
Absolutely. I think he knows exactly what I'm saying. I want to go back to Barbara's point, which I think is so true. You take a look at the health care fixes. Okay. Number one, you can set up a health care bank account, right, Barbara? Who has money for a cell? Of those people who are at the lower end of the social spectrum and the economic spectrum by design for all of these post-Civil War, those folks can't get such an account. It's extraordinary that they can mouth these things, right, and somehow in their brains. We had a letter this morning saying, what kind of Christianity is this and I keep thinking, you know, assuming there was a Jesus, and I think there probably was a man named Jesus, and he was teaching what he was teaching, can you believe that these folks wrapped themselves in his mantle?
These are not actual Christians, though. These are hate mongers using Christianity or religion to justify their incredibly horrific and draconian bigotry.
The language it supports what you're saying, Barbara. Pence was speaking about the agony that was Obamacare. Now, I'm not a big proponent of Obamacare. I think it was a horrible program, but it was a big, giant first step. And the agony of it came from problems that are completely solvable, that John Boehner says will be solved. There's not going to be a
real— Did you see that?
I did. I thought that was amazing. There won't be a real— What did he say? Repeal and replace? Ha!
He said, I shouldn't have put it in that box.
Yeah. Exactly. So, I mean, the agony of Obamacare. We're talking about people who couldn't use the doctor that they wanted to, even though Obama wrongly promised that. We're talking about people whose premiums went up, mostly because of actions by Republican governors to limit the program and to stop its full effect. That's the agony of Obamacare. Oh, wow. What are we in for?
Why are the people coming out to town hall meetings all over this nation?
Yes, ma'am.
Talking about this very thing to their congressional representatives, if indeed it's such a failure and so horrible. I like what that guy said, who you see, you know, they're repeating this a lot because it's such an incredible statement. Which senator or congressperson was he talking to? He said, you used the term death panels. He said, we will have the biggest death panel of all, which is all the people who will go off of it and have no health insurance at all.
We have about a minute here before the break. A couple of emails at panel@wamc.org. Bruce writes, don't conservative values conflict with dismantling the government? Marty writes, Alan is definitely right regarding conservative hypocrisy on states' rights. Another one of their favorite punchlines is constitutional originalism. They decry the practice of constitutional interpretation when it goes against their values, but love it when it suits them. The Second Amendment is the most prominent example. Separation and church and state is another. It is infuriating, and they should really look in the mirror.
I have to say the most prominent example was the 2000 election, because if there is anything the Constitution is clear on, it's the right of states to monitor and to take care of elections. And that was bumped up to the Supreme Court, and they won as a result. Conservatives keep breaking the rules and stretching it, and they win from it.
Our email address here is panel@wamc.org. If you would like to join us here, and we'll read as many as we can this morning. On the panel today, Barbara Smith, Rosemary Armeo, and Alan Chartok, and we will be right back after news from the BBC. It's the Roundtable on WAMC. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue, 9:34 on your Friday morning, and we've turned the heat on here in Studio A. It was a little bit chilly, and Rosemary and Barbara let me know that I need to climate control the place. And Alan Chartok, I'm sure you're nice and toasty warm where you are.
Well, I am, but I just want you to know that, this has to do with... our adipose collection. So if we're skinny like Rosemary and Barbara are, then you get colder easier than if you're something else.
Okay.
If you see what I mean here.
I hope you're feeling a sharp pain because I have my Chartok voodoo doll is in full operation. The email address here is panel@wamc.org, and this one came in from Jim. The Supreme Court of the United States has virtually no track record of overturning itself, regardless of its party makeup. As to the rest, the obvious solution is to vote every Republican out of office as soon as possible. Hopefully, in the mood of the current town hall meetings, will put some fear into them, and that's from Jim. Denise writes, I find it to be quite convenient for the conservatives to make a show of dismissing the alt-right from their convention after relying on the same alt-right to fill halls at Trump rallies, get out the vote, win the election, and fill key positions in the administration. Hypocrites, says Denise. Zach says, hi, panel. If CPAC really cared about disavowing white nationalism, it would have taken away Bannon's speaking slot, too.
Right.
Absolutely.
Hypocrisy, and that's
thank you,
Zach. Mariah writes, I was disappointed yesterday with Alan's assessment concerning the purpose of town hall meetings. The point of these meetings is not for the politician to speak. We hear their voice loud and clear when they sponsor and vote on legislation, but the politician to listen to their constituency about what matters to them. Faso's decision not to hold a town hall because he might be required to sit quietly for an hour and actually listen is both egotistical and spineless. And that's from Mariah in Montgomery.
Ooh, power to the people. Nice letter. I'm feeling my hippie dome rising.
What do you want to say, Alan?
Yeah, I did. I want to say that, first of all, the writer takes great, great liberty with my remarks. I certainly didn't say that the congressman should shut up and not say anything, or that everybody should be allowed to speak, but not the congressman. I said quite the opposite. I think both should be allowed to trade. So, to put words in my mouth, no, I would suggest that you go and join the lumpen proletariat.
I thought she was saying, no, the congressman should shut up and listen. I don't think she put those words
that's what
in
she
her
was
mouth.
Saying.
Yeah, that's her view.
Yeah, no, that's what she was saying.
Yeah.
But Alan,
that's
what she was saying, suggested it should be a two-way conversation.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I said, and that's what I said yesterday. So when somebody comes along and says, that's not what I said, that it should only be the congressman talking to them, that's, of course, absolutely wrong.
Okay. All right, let's take a deep breath. Relax, center ourselves. The pushback from states has begun. Cut it out. The pushback from states has begun over threats of a federal crackdown on the nascent marijuana industry. Officials in Washington state, where recreational marijuana is legal, are promising a fight. Eight states and Washington, D.C. have legalized marijuana for recreational use. White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer said yesterday the Trump administration may crack down on states that have legalized recreational marijuana. Spicer said during a press briefing that the issue rests with the Justice Department, but he says, quote, I do believe that you'll see greater enforcement of it. He adds that something that the Department of Justice, I think, will be looking into further. President Trump said as a candidate that he supports medical marijuana, but Spicer says there's a big difference between that and the recreational use of the drug. The Justice Department has several options available, including filing lawsuits on the grounds that state laws regulating pot are unconstitutional because they are preempted by federal law. Who wants first? Rosemary?
Okay, I'll take it first. More silliness. Jeff Sessions is behind this. His first act was to crack down on transsexual kids, transgender kids in bathrooms, and his second is to go after recreational, pot use. I'm so glad our federal agents will be used in that way because we don't have enough real problems for them to deal with. And the only good news I see out of this crazy set of priorities is that Bob Ferguson, who was the Washington State Attorney General who took on the Trump administration and won on immigration, has said he would be happy to do the same on marijuana, which is legal in the state of Washington. And that is another political legal fight I would like to see.
Alan, that's potentially a huge legal fight because it pits federal regulation against state regulation, which oddly enough is sort of a conservative issue on the other
state's
side.
States' rights.
Yeah.
Yeah. Once again, the hypocrisy shows. Again, what I said, I go back to what I said before. If it's a matter of states' rights that helps them, they do it. If it's a national law against marijuana, they say no. Now, we know that there is such a law, and we know that Barack Obama said, I got better things to do than worry about whether states and the Fed should be conflicting. But here you go again. It's another perfect thing for the Trump people to do.
Yeah, what I'm trying to figure out, one of the things that they said to justify this continued abuse of the American people in the states, we all live in states, right? Except for D.C., which is even more abused. But one of the excuses that they give is that marijuana use leads to opioid abuse. I don't know if that's provable or accurate.
Well, we don't believe in science anymore, so it doesn't matter, Barbara. They want to tie it to the opioid use.
And I don't think it's a conclusive thing.
Right.
There's a sociological argument that says because marijuana is illegal, you've already taken that step, and then, therefore, it's easier to take the next step onto harder drugs.
I mean, there's also studies that show that sorry, Alan. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say there are also studies that show that if you deregulate, if you make marijuana legal, you're going to cut down on a trade that is much to the benefit of drug cartels that sell much more serious drugs. Mexican drug cartels would really suffer from this. They make tons of money from marijuana. So the plus and minuses are there, and we're just hearing the one side of it because Jeff Sessions does not like marijuana use, and D.C. is going to suffer especially because they did vote to legalize it, but they are administered by the federal government.
Yes. So that's why I said they're more abused even than
right. Potheads in D.C., beware.
Did we see or hear what Sessions actually said? Because to be clear, this was in a press conference with Sean Spicer. I have no idea if it was a question asked of him or if he brought it up out of the blue. But if it was a question asked of him, it's possible that he was not speaking out of turn necessarily, but just sort of opined.
Jeff Sessions.
I find that hard to believe.
Yeah, Jeff Sessions has spoken about this repeatedly, that this is a priority for him. He has very much known and on the record as being opposed to marijuana use, considers it very dangerous and a gateway drug.
And, Alan, I know you want to get in, but I just want to say point out that Sessions said that the Ku Klux Klan was fine with him until he found out that they smoked pot. Yeah. So that's where he's coming from.
Alan.
No, well, this business is very depressing. You know, Rosemary, I think you're right when you say it's a mixed bag, because it is. You're absolutely right about the drug cartels. You're absolutely right about the fact that, criminals thrive on sale of marijuana and that the American people don't get the taxes that they could if it was
right.
if it was taxed. On the other hand, we've had some very good people like Jennifer Michaels on our program who said, yeah, and she is the expert in Berkshire County. She's the go-to person, and she says it is a gateway drug. So it's mixed.
As a practical matter, however, now you have states with infrastructure, Colorado and other states, that have already put this infrastructure in place where the sales are happening.
Right.
It's going to be a sticky wicket to dismantle all of that, and it's not going to be a politically pretty situation for anybody.
Are we going to have FBI agents busting in on dormitories and,
exactly.
and arresting kids for smoking pot? Is that what this means?
Exactly.
I'm not sure what a federal crackdown is.
Well, we don't have that in states where it's illegal, where it's been illegal everywhere.
No, everybody's.
We don't have the
pot.
FBI knocking right. down doors in dorm rooms.
But we didn't have a Trump administration either.
Yeah.
The email address
not
is
yet.
panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Rosemary Armeo is here. Barbara Smith is back, and Alan Chartok on the panel. We'll break quickly and then be back. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. It is 9:44 on your Friday morning. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue here for another day. And then Rosemary Armeo is on the panel. Barbara Smith is on the panel. And Alan Chartok is on the panel. And the email address is panel@wamc.org. We talk about what Betsy DeVos said at CPAC yesterday in favor of the rescinding of the transgender bathroom
guidelines.
And yet she tweeted the day before that she thought it was a bad idea, essentially. And you have an interesting dichotomy in this administration thus far between things said by the president or the president's press secretary and then what is said by some of the cabinet-level people. Homeland Security Secretary John Kelly and Secretary of State Rex Tillerson were in Mexico yesterday with promises of cooperation and closer economic ties. But no public mentions of that massive border wall or President Trump's plan to deport non-Mexicans to Mexico. Instead, the U.S. played it safe, acknowledging generally that the U.S. and Mexico are in a period of disagreement without putting any specific dispute under the microscope. It fell to their hosts and Mexico's foreign secretary to thrust those issues into the spotlight yesterday. They said Mexicans feel concern and irritation over what are perceived as policies that may hurt Mexicans. The American officials focused instead on putting to rest some of the fears reverberating across Latin America. Once again, you have one thing said at the top and other things said by the cabinet-level positions. Alan.
As my mom used to say, accidentally on purpose. And when they don't want you to talk, then you're not allowed to. So the great example is the one you just gave. DeVos comes out in favor of the transgender bathrooms, and in direct contradiction to Sessions. And she is told, and I use this term advisedly, and you can go and look it up, by the bully Trump to shut up. Now all the information's out and coming out and has been out about how Trump was expelled from school for punching his teacher in the face. You know, Ray, we had a fight on the air the other day, not a fight, but a discussion. Ooh. About Freud's dicta that character doesn't change.
Yeah.
I think this is a pretty good example of the way it goes. Tiddly-pum. So so therefore, you know, it is when it's convenient to let them off into Mexico, go into Mexico and say, you know, let's not talk about the walls. Let's not talk about the 20% tariff or the 30% tariff to help pay for the wall. Let's just remember that we're all friends and we're going to be friends. And somehow that message gets through. Do you think maybe that they were there and dispatched to be there to say exactly that? Where when DeVos actually says something she thinks, the choice she's given is shut up or lose your job.
Barbara.
I didn't think it was such a friendly meeting in Mexico from what I read.
It was a little icy, I think.
They talked about how four people came out, two from Mexican government and our two people from the United States, and that they looked extremely tense and very serious. This is like one of our two allies, you know.
Neighbors.
Neighbors, yeah. Allies and neighbors that... It's hard to imagine having adversarial negative relationships with the country. This is all one country to begin with, or at least one continent.
It would be like picking a fight with Australia. Oh, wait, we did that too.
Yes, exactly. It's just beyond any kind of.
There's an established pattern here now where the president has made promises, repeated promises in the harshest tones, and then has sent out underlings to undercut it and to soften it. I think it's a mistake for us as the voters who did not vote for him and for people like the Mexican government to listen to the ones who are softening things. Trump is pushing the agenda that he established. Listen to what he said in those rallies because that's what's happening.
Remember, however, art of the deal. Remember the negotiating practice Trump espouses. This can be considered perhaps an extension of that. So he lays out a hardcore position, not expecting to get all of that, but expecting to get somewhat less through negotiation. So he would play the good cop or the bad cop, and he would lay out exactly the harshest possible terms and then have his people go negotiate. Alan?
Yeah, look, it is a technique. We know that you're right about this becoming the art of the deal and negotiation. He doesn't expect to have everything, but he does expect to bully them into what he wants them to do. Barbara, my apologies to you for suggesting that it wasn't frosty. All I can tell you is anybody who reads the New York Times this morning, and it is my Bible. Is going to see what their assessment of this meeting was. So I do believe that that Trump knows what he's doing, sends those guys over there. I think you're right. You guys are right about the art of the deal. But it is not what Trump has been saying. It's a lot easier on the ears.
Rosemary disagrees about the art of the deal.
I don't think it's the art of the deal. I think that he is deliberately doing a deceptive move, sending people out to soften. If you look at the record so far, his words on the campaign trail were very open to transgendered rights. The first act is to tromp all over them. He was very conciliatory on a number of issues. And then what he has done when he's in office has been very hard line. Marijuana is another one. People had hoped that he would change, that he would not go after that. Yet Jeff Sessions is running the board on that. I haven't seen any outreach whatsoever that indicates that he's looking to appease us on the liberal side or to soften any of his original positions. Not one.
Alan.
I agree I agree with that. I agree with that. I think that's right. But when he, on the campaign trail, he did act conciliatory towards gay and transgender people. It's just that now he's not, because everything goes to the base. Everything goes to the base. If they're not going to like it, I'm not going to do it. And you know, the fact that he's down to that 38%, is that what it is now, 38% approval rating?
Right.
But it doesn't go below that, because that is the base, and they are holding with him.
Barbara.
I think that anyone who thought that he was actually in support of the LGBTQ community, I have a bridge to sell you. That was ridiculous.
Right.
I mean, there are some people who truly understood the nature of the beast and are not shocked at all by these horrific attacks.
And you can look
at
another big one was deportation. I am going to be humane. I love these kids who are really trying. We're going to be gentle on them. You see any evidence of that?
Well, the Dreamers are exempt, but their
unless
parents,
unless they like get caught speeding or something.
Right. Exactly. You're right, Rosemary.
No, but there's no exemption.
Yeah. No, I'm not. Yeah, everything you said is absolutely.
It's the roundtable panel on WAMC, and you can join the conversation by emailing us panel@wamc.org. And Mark has done that. Mark said, "Could I get Alan's quote? And he is winning, and it's depressing as a ringtone." It made me laugh out loud. This is from Dottie. Who says, if the administrative state goes away and takes Social Security with it, what happens to all the money us so-and-sos have been putting into the system all these years? And that's from Dottie.
It goes to the military, because we need to be safe, as if we haven't been.
This one from Christian in Hillsdale, in front of CPAC. If Trump mentions one more time about his 306 electoral votes, lying fake media, or illegal leaks, I swear I will pull all my hairs out one by one. Who falls for this stuff?
38% of the American people.
I suspect you'll hear all of those things coming up in a matter of moments. I think he's scheduled to go on at 10. This one from Tom in Catskill. I agree with Alan. Oh, not another one. I agree with Alan. Trump did intentionally use the word military. It's called a trial balloon. If there is no big fuss made, then there is a tacit approval given. The administration will feel emboldened to, in fact, use the military to round up people. And that is from Tom in Catskill. Anybody, at any time, if I'm reading a letter and you want to jump in and rebut, feel free. This one from Matt. The media should immediately cease calling Mr. Trump President Trump. Why should the media show respect to someone who has called them the enemy of the American people? This is the first step to dismantling the administration. Refuse to show respect to someone until he learns some common decency and shows the media the respect it deserves. We have to start taking action immediately. I would disagree with that.
That's not showing respect. That's using the title that he won.
I don't use it.
I don't use his name media, but that's different than the media, Barbara.
Right, okay.
Well, yeah, look, this guy is at war with the media. He calls them the enemy. We all know it. We've been talking about it for weeks now. He says they're the enemy, they're the opposition. Let me say something. I'm pretty proud of most of the media and what they've been doing, and most of what we know has come from that media. But I think one of the things that's so terrible here is that we are all so frustrated in this particular camp that what happens is we tend to turn, it was a joke. I'm going to pull out my hair. It was a joke, but not so much. Or as Freud once said, there is no joke. And he says, okay, I'll pull out my hair. And that's when it goes bad, when we begin to turn on each other. When the people who really are running the good fight turn around and are told, that you're not as good as you should be. Chuck Schumer, you're not as good as you should be. WAMC should be more left-wing. We hear it all the time. So it's very, I feel I have to keep saying this, that it's very disappointing, because I know how frustrated everybody is. I am. Nevertheless, I don't think you pick on your friends.
This one is from Christine at panel@wamc.org. The process of becoming an American citizen is a big, cumbersome, bureaucratic federal government mess that the Republicans want to add more red tape to. You think the Republicans would agree that following the law is too hard already and the government regulations should be reduced? And this one from Leslie in Galway. Part of what I find so disturbing about Bannon's remarks at CPAC yesterday is how vague they are. What on earth does he mean? He wants economic nationalism and describes a country with a culture and a reason for being. What culture? White culture? Judeo-Christian culture? Mm-hmm. What reason for being? An orderly democratic beacon in a chaotic world? Something else? And what on earth does he think economic nationalism will look like? He wants to shape our country. We should have some idea what shape he has in mind.
I would assume he means white culture and Judeo-Christian, without the Judeo.
What is economic nationalism, though? Exactly.
It's a closed state where you have tariffs on goods coming from other countries, and you make a whole lot of bilateral deals rather than NAFTA, TPP-type arrangements.
But if you make any deals at all, then it's not...
If you don't, then you don't have any place to sell your goods.
But, I mean, just because you're not involved in TPP, let's say, mm-hmm. you still don't have to be, quote-unquote, economically nationalist.
Yes, you do.
Why? If you make deals with other countries, well, what's wrong with that?
Well, I think it's wrong because you can't get the best deal if you're dealing bilaterally. You get better deals when you do it as a region.
I'd have to see evidence of that. This is from Gina. We are already seeing families afraid to come into our food pantry because they could now be considered criminals and face deportation.
Wow.
So families in need go without food. Well done, America. And that's from Gina.
And I want to corroborate that on YNN, our local news. They were reporting, they had a report from a Washington neighborhood, someone who had a store, a person who was an immigrant, who had just a convenience store, and she said people weren't coming in. They were afraid to come in for that very reason. So comparable evidence of the chilling effect this is having on actual human beings, though not white.
This one is from Rich.
I'm going to be fascinated by, and I've said it before, how many people decide when the FBI does come around, because I think they will, with the guys with the earbuds and the black suits and the black cars and grab people off the streets. I'm wondering how many people are going to have the guts to say to somebody they know is undocumented, come and be in my house. I'll protect you. I'll give you a place to be. Barbara, I don't know how you feel about this, but this, you know, we saw it happen in Nazi Germany where the price was losing your life. How many people here are going to do that?
Those discussions are happening. There are people who have that level of commitment.
Sure.
And there are also people who are organizing that kind of response as opposed to it being ad hoc.
The panel today is Barbara Smith, Rosemary Armeo, and Alan Shartok. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue here at the helm. And the email address is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We'll be back after news. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. 5 minutes after 10 o'clock in the sweltering Studio A. And Rosemary and Barbara wanted to heat up.
It's tropical.
We could definitely have our own greenhouse in here. If they legalize pot, we'll be all set here in Studio A. Speaking of pot, Alan is presumably well climate controlled, too.
Indeed.
In your via.
Nice and cool here, Rick.
Is it really? Oh, thanks for rubbing it in.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of pot, this is from Carrie, who writes, I was a substance abuse counselor for a while. Marijuana can be a gateway drug. For example, if you are high, you are more likely to make poor choices if you are offered something harder. But drug use and abuse is a complex issue. Heroin is the real problem now. I do feel marijuana should be legalized and get it out of the courts. I feel that making marijuana illegal will increase low-level offenses and incarceration and load up our prisons with these offenders. But that works for this administration because they favor prisons for profit.
Yes.
That's right.
Thank you.
Another executive order signed this week. Bring them back.
This one from Chris. The people in the states that marijuana is legal in voted it to be so. It is much safer than alcohol. It's not a gateway drug. That's simply propaganda. I think the drug cartel argument is weak. Most people get it from a dispensary, grow it, get it from the people that grow it, or it comes from the Emerald Triangle in Northern California. This is from Trucker Dave. The only logical reason to legalize pot for recreational use is for the tax money. What a disgusting world we live in. Trucker Dave says so. Well, thank you, Trucker Dave. And then finally, Rick says, panel, if marijuana is a gateway drug to other drugs, is it safe to say that cigarettes are a gateway drug as well? Interesting.
And then one more, Ray. It's from D., who says, my opinion is the band of deplorables are definitely onto something. As my dear grandmother used to say, the pot, P-O-T, calling the kettle black, question mark. Okay. Thanks for some intellectual Banta, and that's from Donna. You know, Ray, if, as long as I have the microphone for a moment here, let me just let me just say that I was listening carefully to the news. You guys were chattering among yourselves. I know that. But I was listening to the news, and there's a great story about Donald Trump blowing his top over the fact that he thinks the FBI isn't doing enough to investigate leaks, right? This from the man, remember, who said of the Russians, I love leaks. Remember that?
Yeah. We do.
Speaking of the FBI, did you happen to see this? Way back on page 24 or 25 of the New York Times, Mayor de Blasio will meet with federal prosecutors on Friday. That's today, ending months of anticipation and speculation. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio will meet on Friday with federal prosecutors and FBI agents who have been investigating the mayor's campaign fundraising for nearly a year, according to people with knowledge of the matter, and I'm quoting here from the New York Times. In recent weeks, investigators appear to have focused on a relatively new area in the inquiry, looking into the mayor's relationship with a Brooklyn businessman who hosted a fundraiser for him in October 2013 after the Democratic primary, but before the general election, according to two of the people. Like others interviewed for the article, they declined to comment, and that goes on today, expected to last about 4 hours with the FBI. Now, if I recall, Alan, Mayor de Blasio has already been interviewed in a separate state investigation.
Yes, that's right. Cyrus Vance, the New York District Attorney, was running a parallel investigation on this. Look, I think that de Blasio has some problems here. I don't know how deep they are. I do know that that even though the leader of the Senate and the leader of the Assembly are both allegedly on their way to jail, and I say that allegedly because it's unclear what's going to happen via the courts, the de Blasio thing is sort of like the Cuomo thing. Cuomo's best friends are going to be on trial here, and Cuomo has to go. And he, but Preparar, I think, treads very carefully about indicting sitting governors or perhaps even sitting mayors of New York. Although certainly, if you're as old as I do, you remember people like Bill O'Dwyer. I believe he had to flee to Mexico to stay out of trouble. So you know, I'm thinking though that they do have a cooperating witness. I read in the paper that there is a cooperating witness who was the beneficiary of some of the contributions, he says. But it's very hard to prove that if you don't say into a microphone, which is recorded, if you do this for me, I'll do that for you. Now, we all know that politics is a house of ill repute. And this goes on all the time. This kind of trading goes on all the time. The problem is that unless it's absolutely specific in terms of a quid pro quo, it's very hard to prove anything.
I want to know who O'Dwyer is.
He was a mayor of New York.
And he was indicted for something?
He was. I don't know that they indicted him. I knew he took off.
And he went to Mexico?
To escape.
Mexico.
Is he with Judge Crater by any chance?
That's probably where it all began. He had a brother who became Paul O'Dwyer. See, I'm sure you want to all hear about this. Who was a progressive, and it was on the west side of Manhattan.
Yeah.
And he lived around the corner from me. Other than that, I can't tell you much more.
Well, what else you got? We got 12 minutes left.
Well, I actually heard the expression "disappear like Judge Crater." I don't know that story.
Oh, you don't know
either.
The Judge Crater story? Oh, that's
no.
A fabulous,
I know the expression, but not the story.
We don't really have time to tell
okay,
the whole story.
Okay, I'll go look it up.
Alan was a corroborating witness at the time in 1932, so I'm sure he could tell us about it.
He just disappeared, and they were never able to find out where he went to. Sort of like Jimmy Hoffa. You know, I don't think there was a Shea Stadium goalpost at the time, but. But you don't really know where it went. But he did become a part of the English language idioms.
Yes.
It's a great story, though.
Do you guys remember idioms? Do you remember idioms?
Sure. You know, I have several of them in classes.
Oh, that's funny.
No. The idioms, like in Spanish class. Remember Spanish class, they would give you, or French class.
Idiomatic expressions. Expressions, they were called.
Yes.
Expressions.
Femme de loup. Remember that one, Barbara?
No.
Say that again.
Femme de loup. I have the hunger of the wolf. Now, I couldn't remember any of these back in high school because when they gave you the test or college, but they keep popping into my mind now. Sometimes it takes a long time to penetrate.
My Bosnian friends have trouble with idioms. I had a translator came to me once and said, what does this mean, to push the envelope? And he's pushing a piece of paper across my desk. What the heck does that mean?
Yeah. Well, that's very interesting. Is the show over? Oh, no, gosh, it isn't.
Police... It does sound like a break, doesn't it?
Well, let's read an email here from Don. During the 2008 presidential campaign, candidate Barack Obama distanced himself from the hateful rhetoric of Reverend Jeremiah Wright. During the 2016 presidential campaign, candidate Donald Trump embraced the hateful rhetoric espoused in Stephen Bannon's website, Breitbart News. Intended or not, Mr. Bannon's presence in the Trump administration appears to have given license to those who would commit hateful acts, as evidenced by the recent rise in anti-Semitic incidents.
And that's very well said.
That's from Don. This one is from Andrew in Amherst. Alan loves Amherst.
Have I ever told you that?
No, but it's a wonderful
Amherst
place.
Amherst is probably my favorite place in the world because everybody listens to WAMC there.
You see?
That's why I love it.
Just like Andrew, who writes, to add to Alan's hypocrisy comments, hypocrisy is cognitive dissonance, and cognitive dissonance is the foundation of mental illness, being out of touch with objective reality. As this spreads throughout our culture, which is reflected in our leadership, we are in big, big trouble. P.S. Love your discussion. That is from Andrew. Okay. And then Rich writes, you guys are scaring the crap out of me. Well said there, Rich. Okay. Bob wants to talk about Obamacare solutions. Divert money to it from, one, more nukes, two, the wall, three, congressional health care program. And that's from Bob in Grafton.
What did you think of Boehner saying, the Republicans are not going to repeal and replace, they're going to fix it? What did you think of that?
I think he is now becoming a realist, right? He's out of there.
I think he always was. That's why he did get out of it. But
isn't he one of the ones who formulated the repeal and replace, at least the phrase?
He worked hard and came close to making a grand deal about the budget with Barack Obama and then was pulled back by the conservative wacko jobs in the Congress. He couldn't control them and then left. But
Russell says, Russell takes us to task, who says, panel? Question mark, not really. I truly enjoy the show and much of the discussion. I do, however, question how you can consider this a panel with an open discussion without having an opposing viewpoint.
Well, first of all, I've said it 1,000 times. I'll say it again. We do have opposing viewpoints like his. We just read his letter. So if you have something to say, however, I'm very proud of what this group has done. You know, they tell the truth as they see it. Rich Honan comes on. He tells the truth as he sees it. The letter writers tell the truth as they see it. Come on now. Cut it out. There's a sort of a band of brothers out there, and we know it.
This one's from Jeff, who says, Barbara is so spot on today.
Thank you so much. What happens when I have a 4 or 6 week rest.
Are you going to come a little more often now? I hope so.
You save them up.
Darlene writes, can anyone actually believe that a student would declare himself or herself transgender just to gain access to a restroom to peep at someone of the opposite sex? The social consequences seem too great. That's
from
Darlene. Right. There's no understanding of what it means to be trans. It's when your gender identity does not conform with your body. Sexual designation from birth. And this is... And the thing is, we're not talking about transgender bathrooms. What we're talking about is transgender people having access to the bathroom that is appropriate for their gender identity. That's what we're talking about. I'm not an expert. I'm not a part of the trans community. I'd like to hear what people from the trans community would say about this issue. But as I said, it's not... we're getting really convoluted and inaccurate when we talk about transgender bathrooms. We're talking about human rights.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a substitute. This whole debate is a substitute for really talking about rights. And I think we're right to worry about it, those of us who are liberal, because it bleeds over into gay rights, gay marriage. It's under that same sort of human rights rubric that's under attack.
Right.
And as for the bathrooms, they were always disgusting in school, and nobody went to them, even if you had no problems.
Alan, what do you want to say?
Well, we're falling for it, of course. On the one hand, you know, Donald Trump is talking about we need a lot more nuclear missiles. We don't. Jeez. We have enough to blow up the world 45 times, maybe 150 times. I don't know. Now he's saying that. So that's important. Have we had a single letter today? No. What are we talking about? Transgender bathrooms.
Well,
there
you go. Which is not a small matter, Alan. That is a human rights, civil rights issue that, if and when attacked or eroded, diminishes the weight of a functioning democracy. So it's not a small matter at all, to me.
I absolutely agree with you. Mm-hmm. It is not a small matter. It is a matter of civil rights. On the other hand, building more ships and more nuclear weapons is also something that you might get an occasional letter about. Know what I mean?
Well, I just want to recommend to people, I'm trying to find the exact title, Janet Mock, who is a wonderful transgender activist and writer, has a great op-ed in the New York Times. And I encourage all readers.
When did it run, Barbara?
I think it's a couple of days ago. I'm not sure if it's still on. I'm looking in today's articles in the opinion section. Here it is. It's the first story. Janet Mock, Young People Get Trans Rights, It's Adults Who Don't. That's the name of the article. It's an opinion section of the New York Times.
You know, on this program, we are sometimes accused of, doom and gloom all the time. Doom and gloom. Well, here's a letter from Devin, whose subject heading is, Things Are Getting Better. Regardless of the horrors we are living through, I feel that it's all good. We as a nation are waking from the American sleep. With social media being a real player for the first time in an election, we see everything now. Consciousness is growing. Now, because we don't have a choice. We have to act responsibly as individuals now, since we can't rely on the government anymore to make good decisions. If Hilly was elected, we may have stayed asleep. It's not fun waking up when your house is messy. Stay strong. These 4 or less years will be good for the U.S. Talk about a positive spin. And it's really not getting a good reaction here in Studio A, to be honest with you.
Well. Look. Here's the deal. The letter writer may well be right. You know, because I have seen an attunation, probably a wrong word, to the political process that I have not seen ever before. I mean, I see people talking about complex bills in Congress and writing us that this congressman or that congressman voted for that, and really, did you know that buried in there was a writer or this or that? You know, that's pretty heavy stuff, which we had not seen before. And maybe there's a lesson coming out of this. On the other hand, what if this leads to outright fascism? What if this leads to outright fascism, which you don't have a chance to recover from? What if this is Mussolini light right now and not so light later on? This is not so good for us.
Also, it's not that I think that the letter got a negative reaction. What I immediately thought about is all the people right now, today, in real time, who are suffering, who are afraid, who are just being abused in the name of their federal government. So it's just hard. It's like, you know, during the civil rights movement or like the Jim Crow era. Isn't it great that black people had to struggle for their rights? It's really healthy democracy, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I mean, it's like, yeah, we did have to do that, but, you know. Yeah. It wasn't optimal.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm struggling to get over it, as the conservatives say, because I'm thinking of where were all these people 9 months ago when it could have made a real difference. Why weren't we aware?
1%.
Why were we not? You didn't see it coming. You didn't listen to Donald Trump and know how close the race was. And if we saw some of the same activism a year ago, we'd be in such a different position.
You may be right. On the other hand, what about all those people, very quickly, what about all those people who didn't come out, who had everything to lose? And I hear on occasion, which I do not agree with, let me make it clear, it serves them right for not having come out. I'm very disturbed by that because it doesn't serve anybody right to have.
I agree, Alan. I agree. None of us deserve this. None of us deserve this.
Bill in Kinderhook writes, I hear that wine coolers are a gateway to 100-proof rum. And Nancy.
Touché.
Nancy writes, marijuana is a gateway drug the way cow's milk is a gateway drug. What alcoholic didn't start out drinking milk? Smoking marijuana is not predictive of drug abuse any more than wine with dinner is.
The marijuana story has prompted the best letters, I would say. Inspirational.
Whenever there is a marijuana story on our website about legalizing it anywhere, the comments, there are so many. There are almost more than I can moderate. So it's a very popular topic. And so you wonder if Spicer's comments were in fact a trial balloon, and to see how much blowback there will be from the electorate, including, I would assume, many conservatives in the electorate who say, you know what, it's no business of the federal government. That is true overreach to do that. So maybe what Spicer said was planned out as, let's see what everyone says.
Love being a puppet.
I don't think so.
No, Alan doesn't think so. Why don't you think so?
I think it fits into their bag of tricks, you know, the things that they know will be responsive, people will be responsive to. Look, are you telling me that in that conservative community, in the several states where they can't wait to get rid of a woman's right to an abortion, that many of their kids and grandkids and nieces and all the rest don't have an occasional use to get out of to have an abortion? Don't tell me they don't do that, and yet they still say yeah, go get them. That's what gets me.
Well-off people have always had access, almost always had access to abortion in this country. The more affluent you were, the more likely it was that you could access it. But regular people who didn't have, you know, doctor friend on speed dial or know the head of the hospital board or whatever it was that one needed during those days when you needed like three sign-offs.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the issue.
Well, we'll have to leave it there. Barbara Smith, thank you. I hope you come back next week.
I plan to.
Rosemary Armeo, great job this week. Joe will be back on Monday. You don't have to worry about dealing with me for at least a few days.
That's a relief.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And right back at you. Alan, hey, have a great weekend, and I hope the ankle feels better. Thanks to everybody listening. Now, we have a whole bunch more roundtable ahead, and we'll get to it in a moment.